Want to take it. I know it's not me. I'm sitting. You have. Can we comment? I'm talking to the logistic people who are running around.
Yes, absolutely.
Where is Monatian?
Dr. Guru Kist Nasami. Thank you very much. Good morning, sir. My name is Mondli Gungubele, the chair of the interview panel. Rihan?
Good morning, Dr. Kitsnasemi. My name is Dikhan Stok, member of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development, also serving in the subcommittee for interviews. Thank you.
Good morning, Dr. Kitsnasemi. My name is Bridget Masango. I am the member of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development and part of the subcommittee.
Morning, Doctor. I'm Leticia Arias, member of the Portfolio of Social Development. Welcome here.
You.
Good morning. I'm Dalmaine Christians. I'm a member of the Select Committee and a member of the Subcommittee as well.
Good morning. My name is Otto Malika. I'm a member of the Select Committee and the Subcommittee.
Can you introduce yourself?
Good morning. My name is Marisa Gillian. I'm the co-chair of the Subcommittee.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Kisnasamy, Guru Nathan. I'm going to get used to that. Good morning. You are free to... Yes, we think you had a distaste for that. But it's up to you. That's your decision. Yeah, that's your decision. We thank you for coming here this morning to engage with us on the attempt by government to fill the position of the CDA board. We shortlisted you based on your CV, and all those who are shortlisted are given an opportunity to have conversing with us to understand them better. Feel free, relax, answer your questions calmly. No one is going to do anything to you here. Listen to yourself, whatever you say, as long as you don't Google anything. Yeah. Now, I'm the first to ask a question to you. Just if you can tell us what made you to take a choice to think you can share your energy in servicing the CDA. And what do you think you are bringing in? Between me and you is 3 minutes. I've already taken 5 seconds. So 2 minutes, 55 seconds is yours.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, members. It's a privilege to be here. It's also an honor to be in Parliament for the first time. My decision to apply for this was supported by colleagues in the...
Second, you also tell us about yourself in that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Sure. So
you know how to share that.
Okay. I'm a psychologist based at Chatsworth Hospital in Chatsworth. Prior to that, I was a school principal, a teacher, and I'm involved in community work, as well as working with rehab centers. I've worked with rehab centers since 2016. Providing counseling to substance users there. And I think my calling is because of my work with people who've become criminals, people who've become mentally ill, and people who just led to the breakaway of families. So I think this is where I felt I might have a contribution to make. Hence, I applied for this post. Also do a weekly column for a newspaper called The Rising Sun. I have an opportunity to talk about psychosocial problems, political problems, if they don't censor it. So it's a platform in which I can correct injustices. And I think my passion for that also arose from my college days at training college, where I was elected onto the first SASO National Council under Steve Biko. And I think thereafter, considering the injustices our people faced in South Africa, I found I need to make an effort to correct that. Also belong to various organizations such as ISAP, BAPSA, SADC, and now the healthcare workers in South Africa. Trying to make an effort to eradicate drug abuse internationally as well as nationally. So I'm aware of my time constraints, so I'm not going to go through my whole CV, but I would say members are welcome to ask any questions related to my life story.
C
Thank you, Doctor. The Central Drug Authority was established by an act in Parliament. If you can just tell us which act is that and what does the act seek to achieve in your own words? Within this act, what do you think? Do you think there's any gaps in this act? Do you think that in terms of the powers of this act, is it sufficient to address? Okay, 2.2, can you, in your own words, in your own assessment, do you think that the CDA performs its mandate efficiently? If you say yes, then you must also tell us how, and if not, what are the shortcomings? And you can also highlight both with regards to its mandate, as well as ensuring compliance, accountability, monitoring and development, and implementation of the departmental drug master plan by national departments, as well as provincial drug master plans by provincial forums. So then the second part of the question would be, how are you proposing to address these shortcomings? So the first part would be your assessment, and do you think that the CDA performs its mandate efficiently? If you say yes, you must tell us. If you say no, then you must tell us. And then how are you proposing to address these shortcomings? You got it.
8 minutes conversation. It's an 8 minutes conversation.
I think it's a very positive step that it has been formed. Unfortunately, it hasn't been able to function as effectively as it ought to have in the past few years due to perhaps demise of some members and redeployment of others, lack of capacity. Also, the weakness would probably be that they are not well known to the people of South Africa. Maybe there's a lack of transparency. But I think with this new formation of, well, not formation, with this election of the CDA now that's in process, those issues are being addressed in an open and transparent manner. So, yes, I think the CDA has a role to play in combating drugs. Thank you.
Point two, am I right? So we go to question three.
Doctor, the NDMP, the National Drug Master Plan 2019-2024, represents a multi-sectoral approach to create a South Africa free from the harms associated with drug use, misuse and abuse. The plan observes national and international policies, the plans and the conventions to ensure respect and dignity for all people in South Africa. So if you are appointed as a board member of the CDA, you will be expected to implement the mandate of the CDA. So if you could please share with the panel your understanding of the objectives of the National Drug Master Plan 2019-2024 and how you think the Central Drug Authority should achieve those objectives.
Thank you. Yes, I think the National Drug Master Plan is an important document that was drawn up with objectives in place. And some of these objectives are
to ensure the reduction of supply and demand of substances, to ensure that new substances such as Neopi or Wunga and so on are controlled and don't come into the market. It also ensures that there's good governance in establishing bodies that would be able to address the substance abuse in the country. And I think it also has provision for data gathering. And not only data gathering, but gathering of evidence-based therapies and approaches to attack the enemy, namely the drug situation. Also think that many over-the-counter drugs are available and sold as medicines, and this act tries to ensure that those that are intended for medicinal use are used for that purpose, but if they are being abused, like codeine, for example, is a new medicine that's being abused, can be controlled. So I think the objectives are noble. It can be refined further, and it also takes into consideration the objectives not only of nationally but provincially. And I would like to say it should be even cascaded down to district level. And if your invitation to make a comment on the Master Drug Plan, I think is on implementation phase. My feeling is we have these beautiful documents, policies in place, but if there's no implementation, we're still behind. And one of the practical ways I would suggest that we do implementation is perhaps to consider the existing state hospitals. We know there's a serious shortage of rehabs in the country. People are not able to afford the ones that require medical aid. For others, there's a waiting list. But if the existing hospitals create a wing to cater for patients with substance abuse issues, we might be able to help wherever people are in South Africa, because wherever there is a state hospital, somewhere closest, even in the rural area. So it was going to reach out to people. So that was a recommendation I would like to be considered by legislators. Thank you.
The National Drug Master Plan also involves, it's a multi-sectoral sort of a plan. And as a board member of the CDA, how would you ensure that all those sectors are coordinated to each play their role in ensuring that the objectives of the plan succeed?
Thank you. I think the important thing is in South Africa for us to implement any policy that would be successful would require a consensus of opinion of all stakeholders in the matter. And I think if this plan has to be implemented, my contribution would be to consult all people that are involved, all government levels, at various levels of government, community levels. There has to be active participation in the formulation and implementation of the recommendations. And this would even include people who are abusing drugs themselves, because they have the human right to say what should be done about their lives. And I think the consideration also of human dignity, confidentiality of information is very important to these people. They're not just prisoners that should be treated harshly. They are people with an illness. And I think if we look at that, they are people with an illness. We adopt a more humane policy towards assisting them. Historically, we know that everybody would stigmatize somebody who's abusing drugs. Families would reject them and send them out of the house. And we see now in the streets of some cities, sadly, the drug abusers are digging into bins and lying on the streets. So this whole situation needs to change. And I'm hoping to make a contribution in that regard, psychosocially.
Right. Prior to the review of the National Drug Master Plan 2013-2017, a need to conduct an evaluation was prioritized to assess how it was implemented. And subsequently, the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation commissioned an implementation evaluation of the NDMP 2013-2017 as part of the national evaluation system. And this was done in partnership with the Department of Social Development. This evaluation took place between August 2015 and January 2016. So the question would be, what were the key findings and recommendations of the National Drug Master Plan 2013-2017 implementation evaluation?
Thank you. That plan has been reviewed, of course, because they had certain weaknesses in it. However, inherently, the plan intended to reduce harm and demand of the drug. It also had an approach, I think, on criminalization rather than at a preventative level. So, the intent of that act was to help people with the drug issue, set up rehabilitations and so on. But I think the flaws in the system was that it was more top-down approach, it was more national rather than provincial, and there was little framework for data gathering and little framework for coordination of so many people and organizations that are doing the same work. And that's sadly the situation in our country, where we find many people are doing excellent work, but they are almost isolated because we lack coordination of all these beautiful projects that are being done by various organizations in the country. So I think the CDA, in its formulation implementation, needs to draw up a register, for example, of all like-minded people, and then call a conference of all these people and formulate one policy, one implementation for the entire country, rather than doing it differently by different stakeholders.
Thank you very much. Please,
Good morning, Doctor. What is your understanding of good governance, including its main features, and how do you ensure good governance in the CDA?
Thank you for the question. I think now more than ever, now more than any other time in our country where there's stories of corruption and so on that's happening, good governance is paramount to ensure that all structures are working effectively. Good governance has certain basic principles. One of these is transparency. We need to know what is happening, and the world needs to know what is happening. There's also need for consensus. It's not just a group of people making a decision for the majority. Everybody needs to take part. It's participatory, where everyone, even the one with the humblest of roles, need to be invited to make an input. There's need to be addressing equity, the inequalities in the system. We need to look at all this. And more important than anything else, I think, governance needs to follow the rule of law. And I think if we follow the rule of law, we avoid nepotism, we avoid corruption, we avoid everything that we're being accused of in government. So I think good governance means ensuring that what we do is done openly, transparently, and with everybody's input in it.
Thank you, Chairperson. Doctor, what are the key issues affecting people, young people, families, and communities regarding drug and substance abuse? How would you advise the government to deal with these issues?
Thank you for the question. I've been a teacher previously. I also taught children with special needs involved in the community before becoming a principal as well. And we had always tried to ensure that our children are educated as far as all these negatives are concerned, for example, sex education, being aware of good touch, bad touch, and so on. And at the same time, being aware of drugs and their presence. For example, they always say that cigarettes are the gateway to drugs, and so we had many education campaigns to help children prevent that. Working with young people, sadly, we find many young people are destroying their lives, and as a result of which, families are breaking up as well. So we need to target, I think, the young people at the very early levels of education. That would be at primary school levels, taking it up, to ensure that they are able to say no to temptation. They're also able to say no to peer pressure. And I think we also need to look at more facilities for young people who are out of school, who may have been dropped out of school for various reasons, unemployed as well. And I think recreational facilities, other facilities such as skills development centers would ensure that these young people have something to wake up to look forward to going. And their lives would be better after such provision. Yes, thank you.
Doctor, in your opinion, what is the state of public rehab centres in the country? Are there any challenges with regard to access to public rehabilitation centres in South Africa? And if yes, what are those challenges, and how would you advise the country to address those challenges?
Thank you. Because of my experience in the rehab centers, I would say yes, there are challenges. For instance, there are not sufficient number of rehab centers to cater for the needs of people. Many rehab centers are private, meaning you either pay money or you use your medical aids, and many people don't have either of them. So the poorest of the poor, who are the ones that are affected most because of poverty, unemployment, and so on, are the ones that are denied access to rehabs. So again, my proposal would be to establish more rehab centers, but in a sort of integrated way. For instance, attaching it to a hospital would ensure that our patients have psychosocial medical assistance. So this is the important thing. And currently, I think the state rehab centers that are established have a waiting list of several months. And sadly, people may even die before they get admitted to such a facility. I know of one at Newlands, where I come from, where there's 3-4 months waiting list, and more often than not, the patient is admitted to a hospital, state hospital, because of other disorders. We also know that mental illness and substance abuse are linked. It's estimated that 1 in 3 persons will have some kind of mental illness in their lives. My background with psychology makes me acutely aware that this drug issue is not an isolated one, but it manifests itself in all parts of our lives, including mental disorders. You'd find a person who's prone to anxiety and depression is more likely to take a drug and keep drugging to use it as a crutch or to take away the pain that he's feeling. At the same time, continued use of drugs damages the brain, such as cocaine, and that can also lead to other issues such as bipolar disorder and so on. So there is a coexistence of negative factors that contribute to the abuse of drugs worldwide.
Are we done? Thank you. We were dealing with 5.2. Do you have 5.2 now?
Doctor, one of the challenges facing the country is the lack of comprehensive national statistics, and I did think you have touched on that, on the prevalence of substance and drug abuse. And how can the CDA play a role in this regard?
Thank you. Yet again, I must emphasize that there are a number of bodies who are gathering statistics for various reasons. Some of the reasons are for their own purposes of expansion or provision of services, and in some, like the Medical Research Council or SECUNDA, that's the South African Community of Epidemiology Network for Drug Use. SECUNDA is gathering that for academic purposes. They, for example, from 1996-97, looked at the 9 provinces and looked at 80 rehab centers and gathered data from there and found there's a growing trend. There's an increase in the pattern of drug taking. For example, there's an increase of people taking substances over the age of 40. There's an increase of young women under the age of 20 increasingly taking drugs. And this is an alarming trend. But what needs to happen? CDA needs to be the body that is able to coordinate all these good people who are gathering the data, have a central bank in which all the data is deposited, like a computer bank where it's safely deposited, and access this information to be able for us to foretell the future, to develop policies for the future, to understand which districts and regions and provinces are affected, to understand which income level groups are affected and so on. I think that data is extremely important in planning the future for our country.
DTA, if such data, you know, being collected, and I think you have mentioned some, what do you think that data must contain in order to ensure that?
That data must inform us. That data must inform us on formulation of evidence-based approaches. In science, any approach or any therapy that's being used must be evidence-based. We cannot say, I heard this from that person and that person, therefore it works. So I think data has a purpose of backing up evidence-based approaches to addressing the issue. The data will also, of course, let us know where are the hotspots, as the hotspots is a name that came up during COVID, and be able to say, why is that a hotspot? What can we do to prevent that hotspot spreading?
Thank you very much, Dr. Kitsnasemi. Recently, there's been a debate in South Africa and a serious public discourse around the court judgment on the decriminalization of marijuana, cannabis. So I would like to know, what is your opinion regarding that court judgment, and regarding the court judgment on the decriminalization of marijuana for personal use? Thanks.
Thank you for your question. At first, it did cause a bit of consternation in people that don't, you know, who really were anti-drug advocates. However, I think the fact that that debate went to Parliament, there might have been much insight into it and much debate into it as well. My feeling is that it's not the drug, it's not the liquor itself that's so much the problem, but the addiction that it causes and the resultant behavior it causes. If, for example, weed, marijuana, or cannabis has a certain medicinal value, and it can be managed, monitored carefully, of course it has positive effects. But where people are using it simply to get a high, as in addiction, then we need to be very, very guarded against opening the doors to the use of such drugs. There's also a school of thought that says if you make something available, it's less desirable, but something that is forbidden becomes more desirable, and then there's a lot of illicit use and spreading of that. So I think one needs to have a very balanced approach with this new legislation to ensure that the intent of the legislation is achieved rather than opening up loopholes where it can be abused.
Can you please borrow me your mic? Thank you. And then during the COVID-19 pandemic, lockdown regulations were introduced regarding the ban and sale of tobacco and alcohol. So I would like to find out, what is your advice, if you have to advise the country maybe, how to handle issues of sale of tobacco during pandemic and all of that. In particular, the sale of alcohol. I would like you to focus in particular on the sale of alcohol. What do you advise the country? Thanks.
Thank you. I think we all know that COVID took us all by shock. It wasn't just not an economic shock, it's a cultural shock as well. Prior to COVID, we had many households that were functioning normally, even with the presence of alcohol. And in certain countries, alcohol is a cultural drink that they have with the dinner. For the French, for example, a glass of wine with lunch and supper is a norm, like we may have a cup of tea or a glass of Coke and so on. So, but then when it was catapulted into something that was forbidden and evil and so on by the banning of it. So I understand the reasons for the banning, but I think the issue here should focus on the resultant behavior. The argument behind stopping the alcohol was large groups of people gather, they sing, they make merry, and there's a spread of the COVID virus, because when people don't have the masks on through drinking, obviously, or smoking, the virus can spread, and the closeness, as in partying, spreads the virus. So that was the rationale, I think, behind the banning. But one would one also consider, shouldn't we then stop the partying or drink within your household as you used to do moderately, rather than banning it throughout the country. So it's a bit controversial, but it has its merits and demerits.
So what would be your proposal?
My proposal would be to focus, I think, on, for example, Cape Town was in the news recently last week, I think, was it Tin Roof or Roof Tin nightclub, where young people were partying without their masks and so on. And in a closed atmosphere where there's no extraction and there's closer than 2 meter distance, there's a very high risk of the virus spreading. That is what should be stopped, rather than going to the sale of the alcohol. One needs to also understand that the manufactured distribution of alcohol employs thousands of people. And many of these alcohol...
But although you must understand, as we close that one, that you would be violating the right to associate, which your constitution protects. Thank you very much. I think we're done there. Yes. Thank you, Doc. And any comments or comment or question you want to raise with us?
Thank you.